Pavel Datsyuk will return for the Detroit Red Wings tonight against the Montreal Canadiens. There's much awesome. Joy about that. Not only Should from be. Red Wings fans. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, their offense has been sputtering a little bit, and obviously having Datsyuk back on the top line with Zetterberg and Abdelkader, and then also having him on the power play will help.
You think that he's going to improve a 2-for-22 power play? I mean, really.
It's possible. It's possible he will.
Probable. That power play is awful.
That's one of those things. It's one of those things where you hear it and you get happy, because Datsyuk is, for my money, one of the guys that not only do you make time to watch, but you're happy he's here. And Solana used to be that for a lot of people before his retirement. And that's why people were always like, save Timu or Timu one more year and all this other jive, because he was that guy for a lot of people. Which brings us to what is, for whatever reason, a question of the day that you people care about a lot, which is...
Wow, no kidding.
Yeah. Who is the pure embodiment of hockey joy currently in the National Hockey League? The pure embodiment of hockey joy. I would argue it was Solane before his retirement. Some would argue it's Pavel Datsyuk now. And by that, I mean the pure embodiment of hockey joy is not simply a great player who does great things and you're happy to watch them. It needs to be a couple of things. It needs to be somebody who does embody a joy for the game, someone who clearly loves playing it, loves experiencing it, loves being a professional hockey player and doesn't act like a put-upon dick. The other thing is they have to be somebody who you make time to watch, that you're generally excited when they come to your town. But more importantly, it needs to be somebody who doesn't have a large backlash against them. You know, there are players that I think love playing the game, that we love watching, that we appreciate their existence, but it's hard to call them the pure embodiment of hockey joy when the guy next to you is like, that guy is the reason I hate this team. So it's got to be somebody with
You wouldn't be thinking of a couple of Montreal Canadiens players specifically, would you? One diminutive winger, another very rich defenseman?
That makes it real tough, doesn't it? And I'm thinking specifically also about a winger in Washington.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he's a polarizing guy. Absolutely. And moreover, it comes down to this, because as you sort of weed through all the candidates for this question, it really becomes obvious that it's probably going to be a European player. Like, what is it about North American players?
Yeah.
I don't know, because it's used to be Solane. It used to be Lidstrom. Now it's going to be a combination of... You know, Jaromir Jagr's name's out there. Pavel Datsyuk's name's out there. A lot of people giving some love for Tomáš Hertl, which when you and I spoke before the program, I kind of brushed off and said, no, still too soon. But maybe Tomáš Hertl gets into that mix. Marian Hossa getting a lot of love. Is it possible for a North American to be the embodiment of hockey joy? Based on this little nickel and dime poll, I would submit no, Greg. I would submit no.
We're not getting a lot of them. And I react to that in two ways, really. The first is that maybe we're too cynical in North America to be the pure embodiment of hockey joy. Maybe we understand the game a little bit more as far as the darkness inherent in it. Maybe we've seen too much. Maybe we're too jaded. I don't know. But I feel like, let me just get to the point. I don't feel like Canadians can be the embodiment of hockey joy. I think there's too much pressure on all you guys to do well. If you're too scrutinized. You didn't win gold in junior, so now you have to wear the scarlet G for your entire life. You know, I just feel like you've all been beaten down by the time you get to the league, that when you finally get here, you're just like, where's my money? Let's just get through the next 15 years, and then I'll go become a GM.
Okay, so
it's
who is
very sort of world weariness for Canadians.
That is the sort of career path. Who would be... The answer to me is going to be a very unpleasant one for you. But to this question, who's the American embodiment of hockey joy?
Yeah, I know where you're going with that, and I don't disagree. I don't
Zach
disagree
Parise.
That it's Zach Parise.
Zach yeah. Parise. 100%.
I don't disagree with that. Here's the thing. In a weird roundabout way, it's Phil Kessel, but he's also a dark pit of anti-joy. You know what I mean? Like,
but that's just because he plays with
Toronto.
He
embodies everything that I love about
hockey.
I know.
Just because he plays with Toronto.
You think that's
and he's like, he's like the common man. He just happens to play for one of, if not the most hated team in the NHL.
I don't think it's Backus, but Backus kind of hits that vibe a little bit too, of just a loving life, loving the game. But I think he's too divisive to be that.
I think Bacchus is too divisive.
Despite the dogs. Love dogs.
Dogs are a great sell. But listen, you know who else is another great, you know, supporter and friend of the dog? John Tortorella. No one's calling him the embodiment of hockey joy behind the bench.
No, he's the embodiment of hockey despair. He's the opposite end of the spectrum. I have four people written down here. Let me get to my list first, and then maybe you can chime in with yours. And to speak to your point, there are two Canadians on the list and two non-North Americans on the list. Let's start with the obvious oldest one. As much as I love Datsyuk, I think that Jaromír Jágr is the embodiment of hockey joy currently. I understand that he's a hired gun. I understand he's hanging around probably because he's into some guy, you know, 10 large on a poker debt.
Wow.
But he is the guy who works his ass off, who clearly loves the game, who's funny as shit, who just loves being one of the boys. And at this point in his career, I think he shed a lot of the stuff that would have not qualified him for this circa 2001, let's say. There was a time when he was looked upon as the laziest, most destructive cancer that any locker room could have, and now he's on the pure embodiment of hockey joy list. So think about that.
I was going to say, he did the complete hockey makeover. Like, let's not forget, it wasn't that long ago, Wish, where he was the guy in Washington that wouldn't do line rushes in warm-up with his teammates. Right? It wasn't that long ago that he was that guy. And now, all of a sudden, it's everybody loves Jaromír. Yeah. And everybody, me outside of Pittsburgh. I think that wound is still open, the Pittsburgh one, which is why I'd put Jágr on my list, but I'd temper it by knowing how people in Pittsburgh feel about Jágr right now.
So I think it's then safe to put Craig Custance said Hossa before, and he wondered whether or not palpable hate from Detroit and Pittsburgh. I think the Pittsburgh thing, I don't know how they feel about him in 2014. I think it should have subsided by now, but I don't think that Detroit hates Hossa just simply because he's on Chicago.
Yeah,
he might be. I think the hate is past for Hossa.
Yeah, Pittsburgh. That was a trade. His contract was up. He signed the 1 year. Let's take a shot with Detroit, and then he went for the big money in Chicago. I don't think anyone really blamed him. In Ottawa, he was traded when what happened there? Oh yeah, he took Brian Murray to arbitration.
Right.
Oops. Or tried to take Brian Murray to arbitration. He ended up paying him. Got on a flight to go to Slovakia. By the time he landed, he was an Atlanta Thrasher, and Danny Heatley was an Ottawa Senator. That was great. Okay, you got your money. Enjoy your summer. By the time he lands in Slovakia, he's an Atlanta Thrasher, getting calls from Don Waddell. That's a beautiful moment.
Yeah, Brian Murray left him a voice message that said, "I hope you enjoy peaches."
Oh, jeez. That's harsh.
My second pick is P.K. Subban. I know. Divisive, hate, yada, yada. I believe in my heart of hearts that even the staunchest black and gold bleeding Boston Bruins bro slamming beers down at the pub across the street before the game at TD, he's got a tattoo of the cup with Chara on it and all. I believe that guy even understands that no matter what PK Subban does, it's all from a point of absolute hockey joy. It's a point of love. It all originates there.
I agree with that, and I would have Subban on my list. I don't know that if I'm a Boston Bruins fan, I can have Subban on my list as the embodiment of pure hockey joy. I don't know if you can get past the "I'm a Boston Bruins fan" to see the pure joy in PK Subban and his game.
I hate this player, but I cannot deny the fact that he is the pure embodiment of hockey joy.
I'm trying to figure out what you're doing here.
That was a Bostonian.
I thought that was Lou. I'm scanning like my New Jersey Devils lineup in my
same,
head.
It's so the going same
like
impression.
Travis Zajac,
the
Adam
same
Henrique.
Impression.
Where is
no,
he? Dana
the
Zubras.
The same impression.
Patrick Eliash.
I do nine impressions. Okay. My Kermit the Frog is also my Lucas. Ready?
Hi there, Kermit the Frog. When I decided to put Jar Jar Binks in episode one,
it's the same impression.
It's not bad.
Number three on my list is the aforementioned Tomáš Hertl. I understand that you all believe maybe he's too young to be the pure embodiment of hockey joy, but that ignores the fact that one of the prime words in this description is pure. And what's purer than a 13-year-old boy playing in the National Hockey League, fresh out of the womb? He's unvarnished. He's untarnished. There's nothing you could hate about him. He's adorable. He did the thing against Marty Biron in the first game. And that was amazing, and we all loved it, and we love him. And
but
what?
But who stole the show? The guy who stole the show that night is the guy that I put on the list, and that's Joe Thornton. Yeah? That's Joe funny. Thornton. Right? Because he... Who's calling me from... Where's 250? At BC?
I don't know. Why are you asking me?
I don't know. You know your area... You don't play the area code game?
Represent the 250, yo!
Represent the 250, yeah, yo! Two nickel.
What's up?
I put Joe Thornton on there as part of the embodiment of pure hockey joy. I don't know about you, but I always get happy when I see Joe Thornton play hockey.
I don't think that's a bad
pick. He's a treat to watch. His interviews are hilarious. He is one of the... And I apologize, San Jose Sharks fan, in advance, but it's almost a crime that he plays in San Jose. If it were in a bigger media market, if he was in Toronto, New York, even L.A. right now, Rangers, man, that personality would just...
Miyabi, right? Oh, by the way, Barry from Deadspin said the pure embodiment of hockey joy is Joe Thornton's cock. So you're onto something there.
Well, I just got to score 4 goals. We'll all find out.
I mean, it really gets down to it, right?
Really?
I mean, it's just, you know. Yeah. Aaron Secretsen.
I know,
right? Aaron Secretsen, Tomas Hertl almost seems too joyful on the ice. And then Miyabi writes in, Hertl must be fun, must be always. That smile just slays. Also, Eddie Lack and his romance with Luongo. I wouldn't be surprised if we get Luongo from a couple people. We got a bunch of Luongos. You'll have to give us a moment here because we received literally like 400 tweets on
Man,
this.
Man, you guys are into this one.
Spooky
Penguins, by the way, says, thought it was Wish's Quimby impression.
My Quimby is my Lamarillo, is my generic Massachusetts Indian.
All right.
So, come on now. Okay. My last pick in my list is, in fact, a coach. Can you guess which coach it is, Jeff Merrick?
Gabby.
Absolutely. Bruce Boudreau is the pure embodiment of hockey joy. He talking hockey with him. He lives and breathes hockey. He gets so happy and jovial about stuff. He gets so intense about stuff. And, you know, the bottom line is this, like, and again, like, it goes back to the Subban thing I was talking about. Maybe you hate the Ducks. And with the existence of Corey Perry and Ryan Kessler, you probably do hate the Ducks. But would anybody be upset to see those jowls shaken under a cup one day? To see that man lifted up over his dome and kiss the cup and then try to peel off the silver to see if there's chocolate inside? Of course not! You'd be so happy for Bruce Boudreau.
So you're telling me he would do the Phil Bork and, yes. and take the cup apart just try to see if there's chocolate inside?
Yes,
that's your saying about Gabby?
Yes, it would.
You know, it would be the only trophy that he hasn't won. And for that, to your point about him being the embodiment of hockey, he really is. Like, that guy, his entire life, has lived and breathed hockey to the point where, I mean, his book is called Hockey Lifer, and it's true. Mm-hmm. Like, he really is. Like, there are a lot of people, myself included, that you say to yourself, if there wasn't hockey, what would this guy do? And I know you look at me and wish and say, yeah, Merrick, you better thank Lord that there's hockey. Because if there wasn't, you'd be unqualified for anything. And I do appreciate it. The other guy is Bruce Boudreau. Like, don't you just look at some people and say, man, if it weren't for hockey, oh, man, you would be a train wreck. That would be me. And that would probably be Bruce Boudreau, too.
Yeah, he'd be trying to invent hockey.
No, but you understand, like, you take a little bit of ice and you make it big, and then there's a little frozen cow patty that we shoot back.
Zombified Sean says Matt Duchene is playing for his favorite team growing up.
That's a good one.
Billy Niemann writes in Marian Hossa. Steven Stamkos for the younger guys. We've gotten a few Stamkos. By the way, Eric Erlandson coming on the show soon to talk about those Tampa Bay Lightning, including the loss of Victor for 6 weeks. Here's Chris Lund. Luongo, Canucks fans have buried that hatchet, cracks jokes and self-deprecating humor to compound playing for Florida. Brian writes in, Carcillo, Avery, and Ronaldo. Now, I'll give you Carcillo, honestly. I think he loves playing hockey. I think he loves his job. I think he loves what he does. I never got the sense that Avery was happy being a hockey player, did you?
At times. About halfway through his career, I kind of got the feeling that he didn't like it anymore. I watched him play a ton in junior in Owen Sound, and there was a real love for the game that guy had. And right. I remember when he was breaking in with Detroit and rooming with Brett Hull, there was a real love for the game and a love for the lifestyle that hockey provided. But I really got that feeling It was in the second go round with New York, after the whole Dallas fiasco with Dion Phaneuf, that I think that he was just done with it, or he felt like, you know what, I got to do something else.
I don't. Yeah, I think that's the kind of that's the Avery that I think about, is the guy who had so many interests outside of hockey. Hockey was just a became a sort of a stepping stone to other stuff. But it, the naming of those three guys, and obviously their pesty, pugilistic nature kind of linked them together, makes me think of another guy that I wanted to run past you as the pure embodiment of hockey joy.
Okay.
And that's Ty Domi.
In what way?
Well, was there a moment in which you believed Ty Domi didn't absolutely love his job?
Yeah, at the end. At the end, that last, the when he signed the 2-year deal. Because, listen, man, it doesn't matter who you are outside of a couple of guys. And Tony Twist comes to mind right away. Most guys, by the time they get to a certain place in their life, they don't want to do it anymore.
Right.
You know, you get into your 30s, like, ugh, I don't want to. Like,
and but I'm all thinking of the, you know, the Ty Domi on one skate doing the hand motion to the MSG crowd after a fight.
Listen, he loved it. He loved everything about being a hockey player when he was, you know, drafted by the Toronto Maple Leafs after playing for the Peterborough. When he went to the Memorial Cup and fought Kevin Kaminsky in a beautiful fight, that Saskatoon Peterborough game. I think it was like game 3 of that Memorial Cup. Like, he loved all of it. To Toronto, to New York, to Winnipeg, riding shotgun with Timo Solani, to back in Toronto, being, you know, right beside all of the huge names, whether it was Doug or Wendell or Mats. Like, honestly, he loved everything about hockey and loved everything that hockey afforded him and his lifestyle. All of it.
There's 100%. Zero chance
but the last couple of years, man.
Yeah.
I know. If you're a Scott Niedermeyer fan or a Devils fan, no way. But, however, he did you guys a solid, because that changed the entire timbre and tempo of that series. When he did that, I remember, who was it I was talking to, that Maple Leaf on that team, who said, you know, we all were sitting in the dressing room afterwards and were saying, why did you do that? First of all, he's playing his best game as a Maple Leaf that game. Domi was amazing that game. And then he pulls that move, and you could just tell the wind was sucked out, completely sucked out of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And New Jersey took it and ran. It was a weird thing. It was a completely bizarre moment, because that series turned on Ty Domi, you know, hitting Scott Niedermeyer in the head. That actually did New Jersey a solid.
Sean Danahar writes in, what about Zetterberg? The guy is a quiet, effective leader, plays hard, plays well, and even Gretzky's fave. That's true. Gretzky did put him over. Yeah. Paul G writes in, Marty Saint-Louis, very lovable player after what happened last year. A true undrafted underdog story.
That's a good
that's
one.
Small size. That's a great
that's
question.
A great
oh, my God.
One.
Did the mom thing wipe away the contract thing? Did that balance the scales on Marty Saint-Louis?
I don't know, because I've always felt the same way about Marty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did it wipe away the contract thing, or did it wipe away the I need to get out of here thing? Because I was passed
yeah,
over like unleavened bread by
I
Steve Eiserman.
That's a tough question. I think it did. I don't think anybody – I don't even think that was even mentioned during the playoffs after all that stuff with his mom.
You can't. Yeah, you can't.
Yeah.
That's the Trump part.
Couple more before we get to our guests, because I'm sure he's heading on soon. Sam Englund writes in, Pierre Maguire, because he just wants everyone to have the fun out there. It's so true. He does. Go have fun out there.
Yeah.
Let's head over to the ye old Twitter page. I'm sorry, the old Reddit page. The subreddit, by the way, is r/MVSW. Thank you to the nearly 400 people that have already subscribed to the Reddit.
Hang on. I'm thinking about fighters now. Now you got me talking about Ty Domi.
All right.
As far as fighters go, who embodied pure joy? Like, I always mention Tony Twist, because Tony Twist, there are very few guys that love to do it. I mean, some guys like it. Some guys tolerate it. Few guys love it. Tony Twist loved it. Like, loved everything about fighting.
Yeah.
Is there another guy like that who just embodied, you know, the pure joy of it, that just
Stu
relished
Grimson.
It? Nah, not in the second Dave Brown fight he didn't. That was a savage beating.
It might need to be more of a middleweight than a heavyweight, you know?
Yeah.
PJ Stock?
There it is. That's a great one. Yeah, Peach, for sure. And had a good sense of humor about it, too.
God, I hated him just like I hated Domi, though.
Sorry. You'd like him now. He's a good guy.
Nunavo writes in, Sergei Bobrovsky, who also picks himself in fantasy goaltending. That's a real good one. That's a guy who, yes, has the European thing going on and the whole bit.
How about Igor Larionov?
That's a very good one, too. Oh, God, that's a real good. He's definitely in that senior division of people, yeah. 100%. And finally, Section 328 has mentioned this guy on nearly every forum that we have. Anton Khudobin of the Carolina Hurricanes, whom I'm not familiar with as the pure embodiment of hockey joy, but all politics are local, and I'll take a Hurricanes superfan's opinion on that.
I don't think that Cam Ward shares Section 328's love of Anton Khudobin, given various comments made in the offseason. But our guest is standing by, Greg Wyshynski. Our guest is
joining us now on the line is a man who's going to tell us how the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to survive without the services of Norris Trophy lock Victor Hedman with his injury. Here is Eric Erlandson of the Tampa Tribune, and he joins us here on the Merrick Wyshynski podcast. Hello, Eric. Welcome back to the show.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. Good. Hey, kudos to the Edmonton Oilers last night, and kudos to the big guys. Nice game-winning goal by Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Taylor Hall pumping up the crowd, penalty shot, all that kind of stuff. Ben Scrivens turns into a fantastic performance. But, man, was Tampa flat last night, Eric, or what?
Yeah, first few periods for sure. They were definitely that's one of the things that they talked about after the game was just how, you know, the only time they competed was in the third period. You know, so I think that was a little disappointing, especially coming off that win in Vancouver where they didn't play that well in Vancouver either and still were able to come out with a victory. So to follow that up with another sort of poor performance over two periods, that has the coaching staff a little concerned for sure.
Yeah, exactly. What's the status of Ryan Callahan coming out of that game, by the way?
We don't know that yet. The team, playing on back-to-back, there's no morning skate. We haven't had a chance to meet with John Cooper yet, so there's no official update as of yet, other than he's just day-to-day with the lower body, and he limped off the ice, so it's, you know, you figure it's leg-related in some capacity.
When did it happen?
He left with about 6 minutes to go in the second period. I didn't see what had happened. I just noticed he was over, sort of hunched over on the bench talking to the medical trainer, and tried to go out with a little swirl, and then he left the ice.
In that first period, he just nailed Taylor Hall with that hit along the boards. And I'm just wondering if that was the beginning of something or just a great hit by Ryan Callahan.
I think that was just a great hit by Callahan. He really rode him into the boards. And that's what they're going to miss if he's not in the lineup. You know, that's one of the big reasons they wanted to bring him back was for that style of play that he brings to the ice.
Speaking of guys missing and needing what they bring to the ice, it breaks my heart that Victor Hedman got hurt. He's having a career year. He's out of the gate strong. He's putting himself in the Norris conversation, and then the broken hand happens. What is this team without Hedman in the lineup? Are they going to struggle a little bit without him there?
Well, obviously, I mean, you can't take a guy like Victor Hedman out of your lineup and not miss him. He does so many things with us offensively and defensively. He takes on the other team's top lines. He was on the first power play unit. You can't replace him. He's just, you know, he's one of those top tier guys with a skill set that nobody else has with his size and his skating ability and everything else. So they will definitely miss him for sure. They're going to miss with some of the continuity because he developed some pretty good chemistry with Anton Stralman on the top pairing. That's going to be out the window now for at least a month, month and a half. So I think they're going to struggle a little bit defensively. And Radko Gudas is also out of the lineup, so they're missing two of their defensemen. And that's going to take a toll. There's no doubt about it. They will miss him.
They play the Flames this evening. You know, I don't know Victor Hedman. Obviously, you do way better than I do covering the team on a consistent basis. I really fell in love with this guy in his first season in a game against the Ottawa Senators. I was talking about this last week on the podcast, Eric. The game against the Ottawa Senators, you probably remember it. He's behind the net, and he's coming around, and Chris Neal comes dropping down from the point, screaming into him, bam, catches him, maybe a little bit high, like really rocks Victor Hedman. And after the game, you'd expect most hockey players to talk about, oh, I was in a vulnerable position, it's a dirty hit, blah, blah, blah. And he said quite simply, look, it's a big boy's game, I got to keep my head up out there. Like, there was no excuses. It was like right away, it was like, oh, yeah, I got to be more careful out there. That was the moment where I fell in love with Victor Hedman. What's he like as a guy? What's he like off the ice?
He's you know, he likes to travel. He actually wants to be a pilot when he's done playing. Obviously, you know, the teams don't want him trying to do that while he's, you know, under contract. But he's a guy who loves to travel, loves to fly. I believe his uncle was a pilot, so he wants to get into that a little bit. But very easygoing, very very down to earth. Does not have the overblown ego that, you know, a player of his stature might be afforded to have. He's just an easygoing guy. And, you know, I think some of that personality is on the ice because you look at his size and think he should maybe be a little bit meaner. But that's just not part of his game. That's not part of his personality.
Mm-hmm. Stamkos is a guy who's pretty good.
I've heard that.
In the time you've watched, yeah, he's okay. And it's now, but you know, we know him as the sniper. We know him as an amazing offensive player. Overall, all around, where's his game at? Are there areas of his game that still can be improved, Eric, or are we seeing the best Steven Stamkos will be?
Well, he still needs to be better in his own end. That's something that's coming along. You know, a guy with that gifted offensive talent, they want the puck on their stick and they want to score. And what they're still trying to get him to understand, even, you know, his seventh, eighth year in the league, whatever we're at now, you know, to understand that, you know, you're going to get more offensive chances by playing better in your own end. And he's getting there. He's not there yet. So that's one area they want him to improve in. Face-offs is another area where he needs to be a little bit better. I believe he was definitely under 50% last year. He's shown signs of improving here and there. I believe he won 11 out of 18 last night in Edmonton. So there are signs that stuff is coming around. So they just want him to kind of improve in those areas, and then he'll have free reign, you know, to do whatever he wants in the offensive zone, because I think he's pretty good with the puck in that area.
What did you think of Ben Bishop last night?
I thought he was really good. He made a couple of really good saves that really kept that game close and allowed Tampa to stay in it. You know, he stopped, I believe, Nugent Hopkins on a 2-on-1. There was another rebound chance he stopped. Might have been Teddy Purcell. So I thought he was really good last night. And, you know, it's the first time this year they've allowed more than 2 goals in a game. And he is showing absolutely no wear and tear, whatever, coming off of that wrist surgery that he had over the summer. He had the dislocated elbow that kept him out of the playoffs. He's shown no sign of that to this point. He's been rock solid. He's really picked up where he left off last season when he was in the finals.
That's so crazy. I mean, did he come in fully formed, or is there a goalie coach there that's really kind of made him into what he is now?
You know, I just think with him, you know, he's 27. He's 28 years old now. He's paid his dues in the minors. He played a ton of games, you know, for St. Louis's farm team and then for Ottawa's farm team before he, you know, started getting some taste and some feel in the NHL. So I think just when Tampa got him, they got him at the right time. He figured out who he was, what his game was, and he's just at a point in his career where he's just played so much that he's just peaking at the right time.
All right, we've talked too long without mentioning Jonathan Drouin. First game out there last night in the NHL after a couple of really good games in the American League. I thought he was excellent, especially for a first out there. What did you make of Drouin last night?
I thought his game was good. He didn't test the waters. He wasn't hesitant, which, you know, when he played in the preseason last year, he obviously missed all of this year with that thumb fracture. But last year, we didn't see some of that confidence with the puck. We didn't see that sort of game in him. And I think that, you know, he looked like he fit in perfectly last night. He had a scoring chance on his first shift, set up a couple of other really good plays. He obviously comes with the reputation of being such a tremendous stick handler, and I think we saw a little bit of that last night. And even, you know, the game-tying goal late in the third there, he took a hit to keep the puck in play that ended up resulting in that goal. So I think he was really good. You know, John Cooper said he's as good as advertised. Ben Bishop says he's going to be you can tell he's going to be a top-line player in this league. So I think there's pretty good reviews coming off this first game, even though he was held off the score sheet.
There you go. And finally for me, Eric, and thank you for joining us on the show today. What do you think of the Atlantic Division? Are you handicapping this thing, having now seen a little bit of hockey from everybody in the division?
Well, I think Ottawa is better than advertised. Certainly they were one of the teams that finished on the outside looking in last year, but we got to see them in the second game of the year. They got some pretty good speed. They really like to be aggressive and be in your face and kind of use that sort of style of play. So I think they're going to be a little bit better than advertised. Not sure what to make of Boston yet. I thought they would be the class of the Eastern Conference, let alone the Atlantic Division. We haven't seen certainly the best of the Bruins at this point, and Montreal has gotten off to a really good start. So you know, this is a tough road trip for Tampa. You know, they're 1-1 so far with three more games to go, including tonight. So they don't want to fall too far behind some of those teams that are gotten off the hot starts out there.
How's John Cooper this year? Last one for me. Last year he was a darling for a lot of people, a great interview, really smart coach, always good with a good, you know, quick turn of phrase. You know, kind of got schooled a little bit in the playoffs by Michel Therrien, but nonetheless, is he different than he was last year, or is he the same guy?
His personality is the same. I haven't seen any changes in that. He's still, you know, good for a one-liner during some of his media discussions and the times we get to talk with him. I think he learned a lot last year, and even one of the things he mentioned at the end of last season was, you know, they pushed so hard for home ice in Montreal, and now he kind of looks back and says maybe we should have just, you know, rested some guys and kind of pulled back a little bit and just taken our playoff spot and run with it. Mm-hmm. So he's learned a little bit from that. And, you know, if you look at his track record everywhere he's been, we all know the success that he's had. Well, he's had a tremendous amount of success in that second year with his team. So I'm interested to see kind of how that's going to go moving forward this year at the NHL level as opposed to some of the other levels. That, hey, his second year in Norfolk is the year that they took off on that 28-game winning streak and ended up winning the Calder Cup. Not saying that they're going to do that at this level, but, you know, that's the kind of success he's had in the second year he's had at team.
Eric Erlandson, you are a master on the Lightning beat. And we thank you for joining us on the show, and we wish you luck. We wish you deep playoff runs, maybe even the chance to cover a Stanley Cup final this year with the Lightning again.
That would be fun. 2004 was great, so I can't imagine it being even better this time around.
Awesome. Indeed. Thanks, sir. Enjoy the game against Calgary tonight.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate the time.
Eric Erlandson. And you know what? If John Cooper had a sense of humor, you know who he'd pair together on the defense? Who's attention, old school hockey joke coming up here. Matt Carl and Eric Brewer. So finally we'd have a Carl Brewer back in the NHL. Sorry.
Jesus, man.
Thank you.
Society of Hockey Research meetings.
You know, it's only because I used to see him at North York Arena because I played hockey against his kid, and I always thought it was the coolest thing when I'd walk into North York Arena. North Toronto Arena, and I'd see Carl Brewer. I'm like, oh, my God, it's Carl Brewer, a real NHLer. I'm just watching Matt Carl and Eric Brewer out there, and I'm like, wouldn't it be awesome if they were paired up together so someone like a jerk like me could say, hey, look, Carl Brewer's back. I know he's passed away. I know. Anyway, you were saying?
I was saying that we talked about Drouin. We talked about Stamkos. Both of those players, Jeff Merrick, would be considered first liners, I believe, on the Tampa Bay Lightning. But you, sir, proffered this idea earlier today to me on the telephone that maybe we should do away with the idea of a player being a top six player in this league.
Well, it's an interesting year so far, and we saw this last year. We always see it in the playoffs. Are we past now this idea of top six? Oh, he's got to play in the top six. Isn't in a lot of ways the top six the top nine now? The way the teams are constructed and what lines are expected to do. Are we at the time right now where it's not top six, it's top nine? He's a top nine player?
Now, why do you believe that? Because of ice time?
Because of ice time, because of balance. I mean, really, in a lot of situations, rare is a time where you can roll your four. In a lot of ways, you have three, and the way the game is played, i.e. the possession game, there's not a whole lot of outside of talent difference in the way three lines play. Are we at the spot of top nine yet?
So you're saying the fourth line is your checking line. You know, the fourth line is your defensive center, your defensive winger, and the guy who's an offensive player who has to skate with those two because he's just not clicking the way he used to. You're saying that's your fourth line?
It's a generalization. I understand that, but yes, as a wide brush comment.
I still believe that you can identify a top six, but I'll say this. To support your theory,
it's not a theory as much as it is a question, because I just don't know. I just
oh no, it's a theory, my head, Dr. Merrick.
No, you know what? You know what it is?
No, you are wearing a white lab coat. It's got Merrick and script on the pocket. This is a theory. You've got beakers in front of you and things that are smoking.
This is why I love doing this podcast, because I had a bunch of stuff that rattles in my head, and this is my way of getting it out. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone listening right now, whether live or downloaded from iTunes, you are like therapy to me. So this is my way of just getting all this crap out, just moving it all out. So I just throw it on this podcast so it can be out of my head. So that's all it was.
I believe your theory has some merit, Merrick, and I will add this point to you, the stew that you're cooking. When the Chicago Blackhawks are in the postseason and when they're playing well and they're playing teams that do have a line that needs to be shut down, it is Jonathan Toews that faces that line, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So is that really top line versus top line? Or is that top line versus a line that is there to neutralize? And therefore, the second line of the Blackhawks is considered to be the scoring line. Because if you go back to the Blackhawks Cup, all hell, all manner of hell and grief and consternation visited Jonathan Toews during that run because he wasn't producing.
Yep.
And at some point, everybody took a smart pill and decided, oh, my God, the reason he's not producing is because that's not necessarily what they're asking him to do. And so it's hard to consider that to be Chicago's top line when their objective isn't to score. And their objective wasn't to score unless it was in a counterpunch. Their objective was to shut down who they're playing. So I kind of agree with you. Like, the idea of it being a top six when one of those lines inherently may not be playing a top scoring line role does make it a bit of an archaic a label.
Okay, I'm glad you got there because this was the wonderful thing about last night. Now, last night there was only one game. So if you're the Oilers, you're dreading this game last night because everybody is watching you. It's the only game. There's not like, oh, yeah, on Game Center or Center Ice, you know, you have a number of games to watch. If you're a hockey fan, last night you are watching Tampa and Edmonton. Now, the really good subtext to the game was Dallas Eakins was not shy at all about putting Ryan Nugent-Hopkins' line out there against Stamkos' line. Normally you would think that is death. What do you think you're doing? That's why I mentioned, Eric, that Tampa was a little bit flat, because normally you think Stamkos line would gobble it up, right? They'd flood the Justin Schultz's side, zone entries are easy, boom, you're off to the races. Pray for Ben Scrivens. But you know what happened last night? Ryan Nugent-Hopkins' line was better. And that's what I love about coaches that aren't shy about saying, let's see what happens best on best. I love it. Like, there are some coaches that I'll give you a New York Rangers example for you. Mark Messier was one of the main reasons why Roger Nilsson was fired in New York. Why? Because Roger was a line matcher, and he didn't want our top line against their top line. He wanted to have our top line to exploit this on when this pairing defenseman's out there, and when this combination of forwards are out there, that's when we want our top line. Messier was like, screw that. When Mario Lemieux's on the ice, I want to be on the ice. Like, players feel that. And I love it when I see coaches say, you know what? Yeah, let's see what happens. Because players, when you get to the NHL, love that kind of challenge. They crave that kind of competition. But they don't always get it. And that's where you see friction with coaches. Oh, this guy's not playing me the way I want to play. Top guys want to play against top guys. And what we saw in that Tampa Oilers game last night was top line playing against top line. And you know what? That's balls by Dallas Eakins last night. And it worked. And who scores the shootout? Who scores the penalty shot goal? Taylor Hall, after pumping up the crowd. Yeah. Who scores the game winner? Ryan Nugent-Hopkins on a gorgeous low shot that Ben Bishop, really, when you look at the placement of that shot and knowing that Ben Bishop is a butterfly goaltender is going to go down, that shot was perfect. It was a perfect
shot. That's why it was so interesting to see what Lemaire did in Jersey. Like, he had a traditional checking line. He had the Bobby Carpenter line. Then later on, that morphed under other coaches to Madden and Pandolfo. The Devils were always a team that did have a traditional checking line. Along with, obviously, two of the best defensemen in the league playing behind him. But it was never a case where it was top line versus top line for them. They always had an assigned checking line. And I think that's kind of – I think the checking line has gone – not the way of Crystal Pepsi quite yet, but I don't think it's as important as it used to be, where there would be a designated checking line with your Guy Carboneau, your Peter Zezel, RIP, or whomever that you trot out there to neutralize the other top line. We do see a lot more – strength versus strength, but I also think that speaks to some of the best players that we have in hockey being amazing two-way players. I mean, the argument has raged for years whether the Patrice Bergeron line is the top line for Boston. I still say it doesn't. It isn't, but others believe it is. Toews is a dynamic two-way center. Kopitar is a dynamic two-way center.
Yep.
You're seeing the top-line guys on a lot of these teams being their best defensive center as well, and that's why sometimes you see strength versus strength.
And you know what the hallmark of that was? Or is what we started off the show about. Pavel Datsyuk. Pavel Datsyuk and Henrik Zetterberg. The point has been made countless times, not just here but elsewhere. When your two best defensive forwards are also your two best offensive forwards and vice versa, you can't lose a line matchup. You can't. It's impossible.
You mentioned Taylor Hall last night.
Wasn't he awesome?
He was energetic. I'll give him that.
That's gutsy. There's a lot of gut. Like, this is what I loved about last night's game. There were some gutsy moments by the Oilers. Aikens saying first line against first line. I'm cool with it. Wow. And second, Taylor Hall pumping up the crowd before a penalty shot. A crowd that's nervous and wounded and bruised and ready to whip jerseys on the ice. He's getting whipped up into a frenzy before he gets a penalty shot. That's stones, isn't it, Wish?
Don't you think that there's a certain amount of evidence then that the less these guys think, the better they're going to be?
100%. I feel that about tons of hockey players.
Yeah, I was listening to Paul Maurice's press conference yesterday because I wanted to hear him drop the F-bomb that he dropped. And that was, it was a rant. It was a rant about how the media always wants to get in the dressing room and learn about the things that happened there and how it's none of their effing business. And it was pretty good. But he kind of spoke to something that we've talked about before on the show a lot, vis-a-vis the Oilers, which is the ability to learn how to win. And he's got a lot of young guys on Winnipeg that don't know how to win yet. But I think Edmonton and Winnipeg kind of share a similar problem, which is that their core of players have guys that have won before. In Winnipeg, you have Byfuglien and Ladd. At Edmonton, you have Ferentz. They've got guys that have won before, but I'm not sure if they remember what that's like, honestly.
And but they weren't, with all due respect to all those players. And you may say Byfuglien in that 2010 series, where he really was a big factor. But was, I mean, Andrew Ferentz wasn't a 1-2 pairing defenseman with the Boston Bruins.
No, he wasn't. He was, yeah.
And last time I checked, Andrew Ladd wasn't up on the top line with Chicago Blackhawks. It's not as if they have, and I like Andrew Ladd a lot, and I like Andrew Ladd a lot, but it's not as if these are the guys that, you know, willed these teams into the Stanley Cup final.
Are you a rings in the room guy? Do you believe that matters?
No, I'm not. I'm not a rings in the room guy. Because all these players, by the time they get to the NHL, have had some success on the way up. Hmm. And I don't think now, the dynamic is so different in the NHL now. With the idea of what is a captain, what is a team, for that matter. That I don't know that, wow, look, there's Marc Messier in the corner. That's going to make me play better. I don't know. But I think it's something that a lot of younger players talk about in order to show respect. But I don't really know that it's a real thing anymore.
I used to be a rings in the room guy before I realized that the thing that I actually valued was, to borrow a phrase used for Phil Hartman on SNL, the glue guy. The guy who kind of brings it all together in some ways. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a star player and sometimes it's not a star player. But, like, Messier was the glue. Messier, I mean, obviously was a special case too, mm-hmm. but he kind of tied it all together. Scott Stevens tied it all together. There are guys that you bring in that somehow kind of find a way to make sense of it all, and maybe they have a ring and maybe they don't. But that's the kind of player that you need. And again, all due respect to Ferentz and Ladd and Byfuglien, but none of those guys are glue guys at all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't disagree. Yeah. I don't disagree at all. Now, the key is, if you're going to be that glue guy, you have to be a top guy.
Yeah, probably. But having a ring isn't a necessity, I don't think.
Nope.
I think Jerome McGinley could have gone someplace earlier in his career and been a glue guy. If he had left Calgary earlier.
Probably.
Yeah,
probably. I mean, the evidence that flies in the face of what you and I are bobbleheading right now is that there are very few teams that win Stanley Cups without someone already having won a cup being in that room. You think of the 89 Flames, for example. But then you say to yourself, well, hold on a second here. Terry Crisp won the Stanley Cup with the Philadelphia Flyers. Okay, maybe. But, like, it's very – did – like, I'm just trying to think now, like, how many times has it happened in, like, let's just say post-expansion 67, has it happened where a team won the Stanley Cup and nobody had a ring in the room already? It's pretty rare, Wish.
Well, if you just talk to Eric Erlandson, I mean, Dave Andrychuk.
Yeah.
No. I'm kidding.
Not that Dave did a ton.
He didn't have a ring before that. He's by.
Oh, wait a minute. No, he didn't. Oh, of course not. He's from Toronto and Buffalo.
Yeah. I'm kidding. He was on teams that never had a sniff of a ring. But he was a glue guy.
What are you talking about? 93. The Leafs got to within a game, within a couple of shots.
That was one of the things that Maurice said in his presser, by the way, that I thought was amazing, is he actually said, I was really impressed with the things that we almost did.
That does make sense, though.
I know.
It sounds weird.
Gets a gold star kind of talk. And I know it has to happen for teams that struggle. But I mean, honestly, it's like, I'm really impressed with the things that we almost did.
But it's like, look, there are stretches where you're going to play poorly. Like, it's the old standby. You know you're coming out of a losing streak when you're losing games you should win. And you know you're heading into a losing streak when you're winning games that you shouldn't. And it always gets magnified at the beginning of the season. Like, we sat here on this podcast last week and talked about how the Oilers are an improving team. The results aren't there, but are they spending less time in their own zone? Yes. But are the mistakes turning into goals? Absolutely. Are they spending more time in the offensive zone than last year? They sure are. Are they translating into goals? No. But this is like a five-game audit right now.
Yeah.
But I get what Paul Maurice is trying to say. It's just a tough one to hear when you're defending your team. I like the things we almost did.
Derek writes, and I hear what you're saying, but Ferentz defined glue guy when he was on the Bruins. He maybe in the without question in the room he did. I think the problem with the Oilers is this, and they tried to address this with the Ryan Smith thing, is all of your youth and all of the guys who need that example aren't on defense. I think you need a forward to kind of be your glue guy in that situation.
And with all due respect, I think you need a forward who can still play the game at a top level for the young kids to respect.
Well, but you say all due respect. The guy they bought in was being kept together with scotch tape and prayers is what you're trying to say, basically,
right.
At that point in his career.
Yeah. 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 And it's like, think about whatever career you're in right now, gentle listener. When you look at the... that was a call from the UK. I'm getting calls from everywhere today. Well, look at me.
Hello, love.
We'd like to have you on to talk about the Belfast Giants and the EIHL.
When you're young and you're breaking into an industry, you feel like you're a hot shot. Of course, you know, it's like what Mark Twain used to say. You know, when I was 16 years old, I thought my father was the stupidest man who ever existed. And by the time I turned 21, it was amazing at how many things he had learned. You don't understand what older players are going through. You don't understand what older people are going through. You just know they're old and they're not you. That's why I think it's crucial to have, you know, not someone who's, you know, finishing up on 18 and has his eyes in the, to the clubhouse, but you still need someone who can play at a top level. It's fine to say we're bringing in respected veteran Edmonton Oilers. Here's Ryan Smith. Now go respect him. But if you're 19 or 18 years old on the Edmonton Oilers and here's Ryan Smith, you say all the right things publicly. But privately, what are you saying to yourself?
Guy can't hang with us.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, man, step slow, bud.
Well, I mean, if you're in 2014, what you're saying is he's a drag on possession. I'm kidding. This is terrible.
That's good.
You know what? You know I love my advanced stats as much as the next guy. QOD real quick, by the way. Ben Greer writes in, I know it's cliched, but 10 years later, I still love watching Ovechkin celebrate. Pure joy is still there despite all. Is Alex Ovechkin the pure embodiment of hockey joy, Jeff Merrick?
He is for me when he scores. He isn't for me when he back checks.
That's pretty great.
I just heard a funny junior hockey story. I'm not going to say who the team is or the player involved in, but let's say he is a European player playing on a junior hockey team in Canada, and he's a first-year player, and he's been staying with the coach until they find a billet for him. And coach has been feeding him steaks because the kid loves steaks, right? So the coach has been feeding him steaks. And so they're in the dressing room before a game, I want to say 2 weekends ago. And so he's addressing this player in front of the crowd, in front of the rest of his teammates, and says, now, you remember what those steaks were for, right? And the kid stands up and says, yes, steaks are for back check. If I back check, I get steaks.
That's one of the most Pavlovian stories that you've
Steaks are for back check. Yeah, that's right. Oh, back check opportunity. I get steaks.
Yeah, I like that.
Thanks, man.
I like that a lot. And then two more. Melissa E. says, my vote goes to Vladimir Tarasenko. He always looks like he's having the best time. And then Sheldon writes in with one that I haven't seen mentioned too often. Erik Karlsson is a person who I think, based on his style of play and also a bit of his personality, I think you could say is the pure embodiment of hockey joy.
He does look like he's having fun. When he gets a full head of steam and coasts to the neutral zone dancing guys, like, how's that not fun? You ever think to yourself, like, just, man, I wish I could do that just to see what it feels like? But, like, me being, like, you know, the new age Swedish version of Paul Coffey and just coasting through guys in the neutral zone. It's got to be a pretty sweet feeling.
For sure. A little surprised that I have not, in the deluge of tweets that we've received and other messages, seen the names Sidney Crosby or Evgeny Malkin all that often.
Yeah.
Were you surprised or no?
Well, Crosby's a pretty divisive player.
Yeah. There's not a lot of joy in his game. You know what I mean?
He's a bit intense.
Of a rink rat. He's a bit of an intense. Yeah, he's one of those Canadian weight of the world kids I was talking about, which is odd because he's won everything.
Yeah, he kind of has too, hasn't he?
But he's still driven.
He's still driven for, and I think he's frustrated. He's a frustrated. The last couple of years been a frustrated hockey player.
I've seen Jonathan Taves' name a few times. I've also seen people say that Jonathan Taves can't be the pure embodiment of hockey joy because he doesn't have emotions.
He is a little bit robotic out there. I would stick with Chicago and say Patrick Kane.
Yeah, Patrick Kane is a name that I thought we'd see a lot more, to be honest with you. I'll tell you, if you go back to the Penguins, Marc-Andre Fleury might actually be on my list if you're looking for guys that are, you know, the embodiment of hockey joy. That guy's unfazed, and he loves it. He loves hockey.
Yeah. Hey, you know who else is like that? Speaking of netminders, Eddie Lack.
Totally.
Throw Eddie Lack into that mix in Vancouver.
And then I'll give you one more name because this will always stick with me. I've never seen a player enjoy a game in his life and the experience of hockey more than Scott Hartnell at the All-Star game that year. Like that guy. At certain moments is the pure embodiment of hockey joy. Just because he's a knucklehead.
Ottawa game?
Just because he loves playing. The All-Star game, I forget which All-Star.
That's the Ottawa.
Ottawa.
Yeah, I think it was the Ottawa All-Star game. I think so.
Oh, my God. I have never seen anybody that was more jazzed to be a hockey player than I did him that day.
No.
From joy, we transition into a 180 here because we do have to do a few things on Voinov. It is a disservice to not talk about this story on day two. Thank you all for thoughtful comments, both on the stuff on the blog and on the show. And there's been some really good stuff written. Jules from the Crown had a good story. There's another SB Nation blog. I want to say it was Second City Hockey, maybe, wrote a good story too. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Someone will point people in the right direction. But there's been really good writing on the Voinov stuff. And there was a few listeners who wanted to have say. This person didn't want to have a say, but I wanted to point you over to their feed. At 67 Sound on Twitter is a listener to the show and had some really insightful things to say. If you check his feed about 5 hours ago regarding the law and Voinov and the whole thing.
By the way, you know him. You met him.
I'm sure I have.
I introduced you to him at Foley's. Really good dude.
Well, doesn't mean I remember. Merrick, I know about seven names in my head. No. I'm sure if I saw him again, I'd know him. That's a terrible disease.
How are you on phone numbers?
How am I on phone numbers? Awful.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Yeah. I need to do that George W. Bush trick where when I meet somebody, I automatically assign them a nickname. So then I remember them going forward. Hey there, Jeffy. Anyway, he had some great stuff on his feed about the burden of proof and innocent until proven guilty. And how that, much like freedom of speech, it's a legal term that bleeds over into other parts of the situation where it probably shouldn't. Like, for example, how an employer decides to treat its employee. To that end, I wanted to read two emails that we received on this issue. One from Greg Winger. This is about the Voinov thing. A lot of people are unhappy with Voinov being suspended with pay, understandably so. As unpalatable as that might seem, though, it is actually a very sound legal move by the NHL. If the case against Voinov is dropped or if he is not found not guilty, both entirely possible, paying him means that Voinov can't subsequently sue the NHL and the Kings for damages. That's a huge deal.
Hold on. Can I pause on that one?
What?
You can sue because of games accrued in order to get your full pension.
All right.
It puts a drag on the amount of games that I think is it 400? I think it's 400 in order to qualify for a full pension. So there is something there.
Winger says it's a huge deal. Yeah, Winger says it's a huge deal, especially if the language of the CBA is as tenuous as it sounds. So you're saying, although what he's saying is true, which is that by keeping him on the payroll and getting him paid, there's less of a chance he'll sue for lost wages because he's getting paid.
Correct. This is why.
But you're saying there are still things that he could sue for.
I believe so. Again, not a lawyer, but I would believe so. And this is one of the main problems I had with. Remember a few years ago when Calgary, when Daryl Sutter was there, like dressed like eight players for a couple of games? He was like running out of guys by the end of the year in Philadelphia, the same thing. If I was a Players Association, I think Saskin was still running, or they were in transition. I can't remember who was at the helm at that point. But I would have raised a huge stink because by not putting players on the roster, you're putting a drag on players' ability to reach a magic number where they qualify for various levels of pension compensation. That would be my main issue. And if I'm Voinov and I'm dinged here for, like, say, the rest of the season, and then I'm found not guilty and reinstated, oops, we're sorry. Well, hang on. What's happened to all those games that I missed? Do I get special dispensation to have those qualify towards the ability to hit my magic number for my full pension?
Right. Well, obviously the players weren't going to raise a stink when Saskin was the head of the NHLPA because he would have seen it in all of their emails. Alex also writes in. Sorry.
It's true.
Alex also writes. Alex is a friend of the show. He writes in about the Voinov suspension. I know this is for yesterday's QOD, but I have a take on the Voinov suspension that wasn't brought up on yesterday's show. I'll preface this by saying I'm a Kings fan and also an attorney. I think you can analogize the Voinov suspension to how a police department will typically place an officer who was in an officer-involved shooting on paid administrative leave during the investigation of the shooting. In both cases, the player/officer is taken off the ice/street as precautionary and PR measure while they still get the benefit of keeping their pay until the facts can be fleshed out. This probably is the best balance in both of these situations. So a little bit more about one of the more contentious points of this whole thing, which is being suspended with pay. And I thought those were two pretty insightful emails because we have a very insightful readership, and I wanted to share some of that with you.
Smarter than me.
On this very subject.
Much smarter than me, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right, everybody. That is the show for today. I will be at the New York Rangers game at the New Jersey Devils tonight at the Rock. My first game with a Devils press credential. I, of course, also have a New York Rangers press credential this season, having moved into New York, and I'm excited to see the Devils Rangers fun from another perspective. Although I think I went to the conference final now that I think about it, so I've been in the press box or one of these things before.
If you see,
but I'm interested in talking to a couple people about their first taste of this rivalry tonight.
Yeah, and if you see our man Ken Danico, ask him what he spoke to Phil Esposito about. and then. I expect a full recreation of the conversation on the podcast tomorrow.
I will, and you can bet that it will sound like a heavy truck driving on gravel. Pretty much how it'll sound.
That's good.
Between those two people. But yeah, hey, so thanks to Eric Erlandson for joining us. Thanks to the 300 or so people that responded to the Pure Embodiment of Hockey Joy question. Check out the MVSW hashtag, and then also check out our subreddit for further answers to that QOD. And we'll be back tomorrow for Going Postal and all that fun stuff. And if you do have any questions during the week, don't have to wait till Wednesday anymore. There's the subreddit, MVSW, that you can go to and ask questions. And if Jeffy and I are see it, then you can go ahead and expect an answer from us because we love you guys.
It's true. Oh, and a special. We've had a bunch of tweets, and this really pleases me. A bunch of tweets about this. Condolences to the friends and family of Gerard Parks. who you may know from Fraggle Rock, but in my little world, I know him from The Littlest Hobo, who passed away a couple days ago.
Wait a second. Tell me who this is.
He was in some episodes of... Gerard Parks was he 90, I think, when he died? He played Doc on Fraggle Rock.
Was he the old man from Fraggle Rock?
He played Doc.
All right. That's very sad. I didn't realize that he was still with us, but and now I'm sad that he's not. But when you began this, it kind of tripped me out because for a moment I remembered that there was a dog in Fraggle Rock, and I thought you were going to tell me that the same dog was in The Littlest Hobo.
No, was it? What was the dog? Sprocket?
Sprocket.
Was that the dog? That the dog?
Was Fraggle Rock big in Canada?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, relatively. I don't think it was as big as it was in the United States, but it was pretty big. It was Sprocket, right? The dog?
Hmm.
Oh, hang on.
Yeah, well, no, Sprocket was the dog, yeah.
Okay.
No, I mean, I could see why it was big in Canada. I mean, Fraggle Rock had a very socialist leftist message overall about the value of work.
Welcome to Canuckistan.
Equal shares in society.
You just wish you lived here. And one day you will. It's inevitable.
Nobody had a gun.
Nope.
One of my favorite tweets I've ever sent out, by the way, was my tweet about... I actually remember sitting in the press box at the ACC last month and tweeting out what I said was a photo of the construction in Toronto, and it was just a picture of the doozers.
Didn't you tweet something out about the Ace Bailey and Bill Barocco banners as well?
No, someone else did, but I always tweet about the banners that I have to sit in front of because inevitably it's like King Clancy staring into my soul. They're so creepy, those banners.
Little old leprechaun staring at you.
So creepy.
So awesome. Oh, my God. I love King Clancy.
All right. All right, everybody. I'll see you at The Rock tonight. Back tomorrow on the podcast. And thanks to everybody who answered the QOD. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
Yeah. Maybe tomorrow. Until tomorrow, I'll just keep moving on. So if you want to join me for a while, just grab your hat, we'll travel like that's old style.